Okay, hi everyone. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, cool. So look, we're going to kick off. There's not a huge amount of time, and you know, there's other sessions coming in after. So look, I'm going to talk about vulnerability management, specifically application vulnerability management and network post-vulnerability management. Going to take a look at, I suppose, how approaches in the past may not be cut the mustard for today's systems, and then maybe discuss some ideas on how we might, you know, level the playing field, or you know, I suppose, be more sort of progressive when we're looking at how we run a vulnerability management program. So just a little bit about myself. My name is Raheem Gina. I'm the COO and co-founder of EdgeScan. EdgeScan is a vulnerability management managed service. It's an Irish company based out of Dublin. We have you know, clients in the US and stuff. We've a lot of activities over here, etc. It's nice to be back in LA. I used to live here, used to work down the road, and live down the road, so it's always great to be back. Yes, it is true, in Ireland it does rain all the time, and you can thank me for bringing the rain today. Pretty much it looks like I leave Friday and I think that's when the sun comes out. So fortunately for me, I don't get to top up my vitamin D while I'm here. I am Irish. I'm half Indian and half Irish, so you can tell I definitely got the Indian name. I like to think I got the Irish sense of humour, so that's me anyway. So look, just a quick intro. You know, you see all these different companies, big organisations, big names, brands. You're probably guessing what they all have in common. It's probably pretty obvious. I couldn't resist the giant Marriott image there at the end, which I had to make a quick amendment there late last week to the slide deck before I sent them over. Yes, they have all been hacked. You know, these are big companies and they have large security budgets, some of them, some don't, that's fine. There's definitely intelligent people working there. You know, and all these types of things, they have, you know, dedicated security people. So, you know, why do these things keep happening? And if you think about it, this is what you would expect. You know, you've got, the more money you pump into these problems to try and get better security, you would hope that the incidents or the impact or things like that of security incidents tends to decrease. However, in reality, it sort of seems to be going more this way. So obviously, it's not a matter of maybe, you know, where we're not spending enough money, maybe just we're not doing it smartly enough. And vulnerability management is just one piece of the whole puzzle here. And, you know, there are other things involved as well, but getting a vulnerability management program working is a good start. So we're going to discuss some of the problems that traditionally would have affected how we view and deal with vulnerabilities. So if you think about it, this iceberg here represents vulnerabilities in a given system or application. And if you think about it, you know, how long have we spent developing this application? Maybe we've had a team of 10, 20, 50 developers working on this. This is our enterprise product. They've been working on for, you know, equivalent of 10 man years, because, you know, maybe it's multiple, many years old. And the way we used to go about doing security was the annual assessment. It could be an audit, pen test, something like that, where you get a team of people to come in and try and find holes in it and give you a report, you fix them, and then you're good until next year. And typically, you know, you might spend maybe 2 weeks looking for the vulnerabilities in this system. But then if we think about all the other stuff, you know, there's a lot of potential problems there, and there's a very short amount of time where we can actually find these things. So if we think about the 2 week period, somebody comes in, they, you know, there's you know, when you're doing a pen test or a security assessment, you're tuning your tools, you're trying to figure out, get things working, make sure you get the coverage right. You know, you're trying to make sure you use the most up-to-date attack vectors to make sure you can find all these vulnerabilities. You know, you're hoping to get as big coverage across the app as possible, or system, or whatever it is. You know, and then you've got all this stuff, you know, higher experience. Hopefully, obviously, if you're, you know, a reputable you know, pen testing company or whatever, that's fine, that shouldn't be an issue. You know, things like, you know, was the environment set up properly? Are you testing production, non-production? Is it set up the way it is in production? Is it the right code branch? All these different things can fall into play. Sometimes functionality doesn't work when you test it. That means that there's a gap in your assessment. And then obviously if there's any vulnerabilities there, you will have missed them. And then, you know, are the pen testers in that period, are they as good as the bad guys? I mean, the bad guys have all year to look at your system very slowly, maybe under your radar of whatever alerting systems you have. And then as soon as that code, it goes live, the code might change next day, week, month, a new release, and then you've changed functionality, you may have introduced more stuff. So that sort of notion of where we are looking at, you know, an annual type of assessment of the system doesn't really fit with the way we do development this day and age, and we'll look at that in a second. So the next problem is, you know, you're only as good as the code that you're made up from. So if we think about our typical application code, that's over there on the left, how do we, what does that comprise of? Well, we have maybe our internal development team are working on it, and then maybe we've outsourced a certain component to some other team somewhere else or a third-party company. Maybe we've also bought some off-the-shelf stuff and customized it. So, you know, and then we think, okay, well, where did those pieces of code come from? So you've got maybe the commercial off-the-shelf stuff, they had outsourced that to somebody else, and then obviously they use third-party APIs, third-party components and different types of things like that. You know, where's the security assessment on those bits? You know, who developed those, at what point, where and when? And all of these things end up in your code. The code you write in a typical system probably comprises, you know, whatever percentage, but you will always be using third-party libraries. Think about any typical web app. You're going to be using, you know, jQuery or Angular or different frameworks or whatever. So you have to sort of think about the bigger picture of what is making up my code. Looking at just a few stats based on some of this stuff, 23% components in the average software application contains known vulnerabilities. A lot of these come from the third-party components. And you know, there are 60% business don't keep an accurate inventory of these components. So you know, if a known vulnerability comes in, whatever framework or whatever third-party component you're using, if you don't know you have that in that particular version and you're not looking out for these things, then there's a risk there that you're just letting that stay part of your application, but it's effectively unpatched. And if you take an example of Struts, there's a CVE, a known vulnerability, a remote code execution attack, it's a pretty nasty one, found in 2017 and patched, it's found in those systems. However, when you go and check out how many times people download the vulnerable versions of that software, just as an example, because this happens all the time, people are downloading the vulnerable versions of these and installing and using them. So straight out of the bat, they already have problems. This was downloaded 2 million times, so you know somebody's. It's probably going to end up in some system somewhere. The next problem is, you know, sometimes we bite off a bit more of a problem than we can chew. And the idea there is that, you know, as a large organization, you know, there's one CISO or CEO or whatever, the different business units, all the different security staff, and it peters down to, you know, how many web apps we have, what divisions. And if we look at that sort of as an example, we have 200 web apps, pretty large sort of estate, you know, 1,000 web servers and another couple of, you know, whatever databases. If we were to do a single assessment of all of that stuff at any given point in time, you'd be looking at 200 pen tests done on a web app. That's what, maybe 1 or 2 weeks each over whatever period. What is that? That's going to be 200 reports. For the infrastructure stuff, you're probably looking at another 1 or 2 reports based on all of that stuff. Any issues that are found, you know, your security team are going to end up with 320, 305 reports or whatever. They're pulling stuff out, putting stuff into spreadsheets. I've done it, we've all done it. Just trying to get a handle of where, you know, what does my risk register look like? How do I handle all of these things? So the old adage definitely is apt here about we can't improve what we can't measure. And if we don't sort of have a view of our vulnerabilities at any given time, it's hard to be able to even start to improve things. The next thing is that nothing ever really stands still, and that's definitely true in regards to, you know, the vulnerability landscape. specifically, in particular for application layer types of vulnerabilities, but also on the network layer. If we think about it, we have maybe a web app, it's sitting on an operating system and all the other associated stuff. Let's say we've done many security assessments, we don't touch that code, it's just static. Just because we don't touch it doesn't mean vulnerabilities aren't going to come in somewhere else. For example, you know, maybe there's an operating system or a framework issue or something that comes in there. And then likewise, the real challenge is in the app layer, and this comes down to how we're totally changed how we develop applications today. You know, all the shift everywhere from all different industries to move to agile methodologies is sort of flipping this stuff on its head, you know. Even the, I suppose, the risk-averse and very traditional industries like banking and finance, you know, where they, you know, use the waterfall sort of framework to develop code, they're all moving towards agile. So the idea is, you know, we're changing, making lots of little changes very often. And it's great from a business standpoint because you can push new features, you can change things, you can react quickly to business needs, but also it's going to introduce risk. Anytime we change our code, we could be introducing vulnerabilities, and you know, so there's that notion there where, you know, maybe, you know, if we're changing code, pushing new code every day, our annual pen test isn't really going to be able to keep pace with it. And as you can see there, you know, we may have, let's say, a security audit or a pen test, you know, the traditional approach. But we need to sort of be looking at least upping the frequency to try and at least match how attackers look at stuff. Because if, you know, somebody's not actively looking at your systems from the internet, you can probably be sure that there are automated scripts, people just sort of poking around in the blind just to see if they could find you know, vulnerabilities in systems, even if they aren't targeting your organization specifically. So we're going to do a reality check. We're going to look at some statistics based on what the sort of landscape looks like at the moment. And where are these stats come from? Well, they come from our own platform. I'll just explain very, very briefly. The idea is we're looking for vulnerabilities in assets. An asset can be anything with an IP, effectively. So it can be any type of system, network, hostware stuff. It could be a single IP, a bunch of IPs. It can be, you know, a web app, all that kind of stuff. What we do is we do, you know, we realize that automation is good for some things, but it's not good for other things. Context and finding security issues and risk. We tend to use people to do that. So what we do is we people driving all the different engines looking for vulnerabilities, and they're also then making sure that the vulnerabilities that are found are actually in fact real. And then stuff is pushed into a portal. So what we do over time, we're finding vulnerabilities all the time in different systems. And a couple of years ago, we thought, hey, we have this great data set. We should do something cool with it. Recently, in the last year, and again this year now, we've contributed our data set to Verizon's for the DBIR report, which is great to be part of that, to be part of that report as well. I mean, that focused on data breaches. So we do a very lightweight thing where we just look at the different types of trends, what are the most common types of vulnerabilities, etc., that we find at the moment. So when we're saying full stack, we're looking across the whole stack, effectively. We're not just focusing on web app vulnerabilities, we're also looking at other vulnerabilities lower down, you know, network and host and OS and framework stuff as well, and the communication channels. The model, you know, we do thousands of assessments. We're hopefully looking at, you know, full stack, very low false positive rate. That's the whole point of the whole thing. And across a wide different range of industries, you know, media, you know, everything, basically. You know, everyone needs to operate on the internet these days, and so that's a big range there. So the risk dispersion, this focuses on vulnerabilities from the last year. We will be releasing a new report we're working on at the moment. It will be released in January to focus on the last calendar year. This is sort of up to late last year. That's the sample space we're looking at. So the breakdown here is by sheer volume, 73% of all the vulnerabilities we found were in the network and host layer, by volume. And only, say, one quarter, 27% there, were found in the application layer. Now, the flip side of that is we found the most severe issues, that 20% of the issues in the app layer were higher critical risk. So there's less issues in that layer, but they're way more critical, that they're more severe. And then only 2% of all the issues in the network layer were found to be higher critical. So we look at web app layer a little bit. A bit more closely, we find, you know, there's lots of high critical risk issues there, things that are easily exploitable, can be very damaging and bad, and it sort of ties in with how you see how people are developing applications in particular with, you know, agile methodologies as we discussed, so you can see how this stuff is sort of creeping in into that sort of fast pace of development. And if we sort of look at the different types of vulnerabilities in that space, we've got nearly a quarter are client-side security issues, things like cross-site scripting, which just keeps exploding. You know, we're seeing a trend moving away from the injection type attacks like SQL injection. Obviously, very damaging if you have those types of issues. People can, you know, get access to your data, your database, and all that sort of stuff. I think the newer frameworks, ORM, and other types of database systems have changed now where they're sort of turning security on by default. You have to go out of your way to make yourself less secure. I think that's making a big impact there. Because we see those attacks, those vulnerabilities are decreasing. However, the client-side stuff just keeps getting bigger. And I suppose it sort of makes sense, you know, why attack an organization directly head-on when you can attack their end users? Things that, so people trying to leverage phishing attacks against end users and things like that. Other issues there are, you know, common, you know, insecure configuration of systems and things like that. Okay, and then on the infrastructure layer, there by volume, there's just so many different types of vulnerabilities. Lots of crypto-related issues, but they're not as high or critical. Systems tend to be better sort of wrapped up. A bit more commoditized. If you're thinking about the, you know, your operating system patching and stuff like that. So looking into the network layer a little bit more, you see nearly half of the issues we found were related to some kind of cryptography issue. You know, all of the really cool sounding vulnerabilities like breach and poodle and drown that you can't keep up with because, you know, you're only as good as how cool a name you have for your crypto vulnerability. Huge problems there. Now, a lot of these issues might not be very severe. They're probably stuff that you might want to look at, you know, at some point, but they wouldn't result in a breach straight away, or else it would be maybe a lot more effort for somebody to leverage and try and use those issues against you. Configuration issues are always huge there as well. And the patching issues are interesting. What we find is that not the traditional types of patching that you would normally think of, the Microsoft patches, the OS stuff that you roll out. What we find the issues that are more prevalent are the more framework level patching, like Apache struts and things like that. People tend to not want to fix or roll out the patches that are available for those types of frameworks. And it sort of makes sense as well because, you know, if you have an application running on Struts version whatever and you upgrade it, you're probably going to break your app. You're going to need to get your developers or pay somebody to try and fix your app to make it work on that. And there's a lot of hassle and stuff like that. However, there are some pretty serious issues out there as well, you know, with remote code execution and things like that. I like this one because it just blows my mind every time I see it. This is... So CVE is common vulnerability and exposures. Anytime a known vulnerability is found in a given system, like a popular product, like whatever, Apache or something, NIST will give it a CVE based on the year it was identified and a sequential number. This chart represents all the known vulnerabilities that we found in the calendar year 2017. So we found in systems that are on the internet, these are our client systems now, we're not just poking around blindly. We found vulnerabilities running from, obviously 2017, you would expect to see some because they were found that year and then a patch is released. People hopefully patch them and then they're fixed. But we're looking at all issues spanning all the way back from 1999 on systems that were found that year. I mean, that just blows my mind. If you think back to how long ago that was and all the different types of every single issue there has a fix for it. So really there shouldn't be any reason why it should be still present in a system that you have and you're running production code on. And it just makes me think about, people freak out the latest, 0 days and all the cool advanced threats and all that. And that's all cool. But then, if you can't even just sort of get the stuff that's there, it's easy. It might not be that sexy to do, but it's there and it's a quick win. Maybe we shouldn't be freaking out about all the advanced, super advanced threats. Just a quick look at some of the most common vulnerabilities in that space. We won't go into them in huge detail, but problem with MD5, an issue there with a JavaScript framework, a jQuery issue, and an error handling issue which results in an information disclosure. Three of those issues have a CVSS score of higher than 4, so if you happen to be subjected to PCI, the payment card stuff, if you were handling credit cards on whatever system, that would be a fail for you. These were the most common ones we found that year. I wish I actually got to go to this conference. This slide was taken from a conference in New Zealand in 2009. I still love it. And it just sort of, speaks a lot about how we tend to approach or how we have been approaching security, vulnerability management, and all that sort of stuff, where we just silo stuff. We secure our little bit, and then we don't really care about the rest. Or maybe we do care, but we just can't do it. Maybe we only can take it little chunks at a time. As a security professional, I've at least heard every excuse on that list as a reason to why a system had a vulnerability or as to why they weren't going to fix it. And again, at the end of the day, a hacker doesn't really care if a breach is going to happen. Just because you use any of these to justify it or whatever, there's still a risk there. It's just something to think about. And as well, when we're talking about vulnerabilities and vulnerability management, it's not just identifying our vulnerabilities. We need to sort of have a higher look at our attack surface and the visibility of the whole thing, because visibility is key. We're looking for vulnerabilities, great. We may find, you have a system and you run, you expose SSH, secure shell to the internet. That's not a security vulnerability. It's probably a security issue. Why would you want it there? Maybe you should try and lock it down. So it's I suppose, a vulnerability management, as a whole, looking at it holistically, not just identifying specific vulnerabilities, but maybe, trying to have a look at the visibility of your whole attack surface. So these are things like, looking for, knowing at any given time I have 25 servers and they're all internet facing, they are running these services, that kind of stuff. That sort of information is very powerful when you tie it in with the full vulnerability management platform. So as we sort of wrap up then, because I have 2 minutes left, thinking about coverage, making sure that we're not just focusing on certain components only, being able to say, if we're doing authenticated testing, we are in fact testing the inside of the application. We're not just hitting the front wall. Looking at more than just the one component, not siloing things, that's definitely key. Things like DevSecOps integration or DevOps, DevSecDevOps, whatever way you want to tie all that in, Being able to, you know, if you've got a team and they have a SIEM or a SIM, being able to tie, if we find a vulnerability, let's, you know, send them a Slack alert straight away so they know what's going on. Tying all these things up together are key, because I suppose the security industry has a and we're all guilty of it, you know, has a habit of having, you know, very good solutions stand alone, but trying to tie them all together, which is where the real power can come in. Minimizing false positives. This still blows my mind. I don't know any other industry or where it's, you know, where it's acceptable for you to pay for somebody to do an audit of you. They can give you a report, and pretty much any amount of data in that report could be not true, could be a false positive. And then for you to go, thank you very much for the report, half of this information isn't even real, and here's your money. I don't know why that ever became acceptable, and it just beggars belief. I think people spend a huge amount of money and time trying to, you know, internally trying to actually figure out what their real issues are. So minimizing false positives can only be a good thing. Having the notion of a continuous, what does continuous testing mean? Probably means high frequency stuff. Something where we're not just looking at something once, we're going to do it maybe regularly. That's a good approach. Alerting as well, alerting is always great. Things like metrics, being able to see at any given time, you know, we were, you know, at the start of the year we had X number of vulnerabilities and we've actually been fixing them because we can see our risk score decreasing. Great. Or maybe it's getting worse and then we need to know, well, what's happened? I've seen the last release, we've got 20 new high risk specific vulnerabilities. Well, maybe our dev team needs to get specific training around that. You know, there's all these different things you can learn from being able to track metrics properly. And then API as well, if we can have some notion of being able to pull the data out, using it in our own systems, not necessarily having to use another vendor's specific platform, tying them all up together. So when we get to, I suppose, do all of that stuff, or at least in a certain degree, we tend to get move towards continuous visibility. And then I suppose at that point we're probably going to be moving towards a better place in regards to our vulnerability management platforms and systems. That's me. So thank you very much, and hope you enjoy the rest of your day.